And we're back with more business and finance news today, opinions and observations. We have Charles Sizemore joining us on the HealthyLife.net News at 7. Charles has been on in the past. He is, among other things, one of the many investors on Covestor.com, where you can go on and kind of find what some of the people that are having success in today's market are doing and watch the trading on the site. And CharlesSizemore.com if you want to find out more about what he's doing. Also, plenty of information with newsletter. And we're going to talk today about, well, a little bit about spirits in the market, but we're also going to look over to hear a lot about what's happening in Europe and some of the bailouts going on worldwide. And Charles Sizemore, welcome back to the HealthyLife.net News at 7 today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we have a lot of countries over there, Charles, that are kind of going through the bailout thing. You know, we had a situation obviously here in the U.S. a couple years ago with some financial relief and bailouts. We look over at Europe, and I think we've had officially four countries now. We've had Ireland, Greece, Portugal, and now Spain is the latest and the biggest, and maybe the one with the biggest impact on the recent bailouts over there.
You bet. And the interesting thing about Spain is that they've had a bailout in all but name. They're not officially calling it a bailout, because that comes with certain stigmas and certain losses of control, but it's a bailout for all intents and purposes. I don't know what else you would call it. Today, Spain announced that they were, you know, at the EU's bequest, putting through some pretty harsh austerity measures. They're raising sales taxes. They're cutting the salaries of public workers, and they're, you know, overall just spending less and taking in more taxes. Why, you might ask? Well, the EU is the one providing the funds, and that was sort of the quid pro quo. You guys do a little bit more to bring in some new revenues with taxes and what have you. We'll cut you a little slack. We'll allow you to stretch it out for another year. We'll allow you to, you know, we'll put the bailout monies into your banks instead of into the state directly. So there's been, like I said, it's sort of a bailout in all but name.
Yeah, and I was reading, I think just last week, there's a new airport tax to, it's a fairly prohibitive tax to be on a plane to take off now.
Yeah, and the ironic thing is if you're in a deep recession, as Spain is right now, the last thing you want to do is disincentivize people to spend money. You want people going out, spending money in the stores, getting on airplanes, eating in restaurants, what have you. And so when you see consumption taxes like that, when you see a rise in sales taxes, when you see airport taxes, when you see all of these little fees, you have to think, well, this is actually going the wrong direction. This is going to cause them more problems than it's solving. And it is funny you mentioned airports. One of the things that they discussed to appease the EU and the finance ministers there was privatizing their airports. So we'll see how that goes. Normally, I'm very much in favor of privatization. I think that will be in the country's best long-term interest. But right now, it's just about raising money where they can.
Yeah, and that might be, you know, kind of a desperate grab here. Maybe they're trying to, you know, take over some of the funds coming in for, you know, people traveling. Obviously, Spain, a destination point. Some people want to run the bowls of the summer. They just won the European Cup and the Olympics. You know, a lot of popular athletes, Federer, you know, with Wimbledon and stuff. So seems like, you know, tourism and they're definitely a place where people would want to visit. Maybe they're thinking that way, but as you said, if you raise taxes, it's going to be tougher for the general population to, you know, have incentive to go out and buy the daily bread and butter type of stuff.
You bet.
Now, something else that seems to be a strong thing in a recession, even if you look back to the Great Depression of the 1920s, 1930s in the U.S., there was a certain certain groups of people made money selling alcohol. Obviously, prohibition and the accessibility of alcohol, legal or illegal, at a time when people were looking for a little diversion or a little relief at the end of the day. A little bit different time now, but we're seeing kind of a new market in the alcoholic beverages with a lot of craft beers and what used to be known as microbrews and some of the new wine and spirit companies trying to make a little bit different product, and a lot more farming is going into that. Is this something that's obviously people are going to be consuming alcohol, but seems like this might even be a viable investment or something to keep an eye on for people playing on the market.
Absolutely. When times are tough, people drink more, they say. I mean, it's a little bit of a cliche, and I don't really believe that. But in terms of, you know, what industries are likely to have at least stable demand when the economy is in recession or weakening, and alcoholic beverages are certainly one of them. It's not that people drink more when the economy is bad. It's just that they refrain from drinking less often. You know, they tend to be quite stable. A lot of vice investments are that way. Tobacco is another good example there. Mm-hmm. But within the alcohol sphere, you have a lot of good stuff going on here. One is that the U.S. has been going through sort of a gentrification of the beer industry for, you know, going on 20 years now. It's still gaining steam. Americans have traded up from a lot of cheaper domestic brews to imports and microbrews. And Sam Adams has been an interesting case of that. Boston Beer has become a fantastic success in the microbrew industry. Now, they're just one player, and there are others that are privately held and what have you, but that's one interesting angle. Two, I actually like the big brewers, even though they're a little bit weak in the U.S. these days, because they have great exposure overseas. Mm-hmm. Most people don't realize this, but over half the global beer market is dominated by just four companies, the biggest of which is Anheuser-Busch InBev. Whenever you go to a foreign country, you go take a vacation in Mexico, you go to Brazil, you go to Turkey, you know, wherever you go, chances are good that the local brew you buy in a pub is owned by either Anheuser-Busch or Heineken or SAB Miller or one of those big companies. That to me is a great long-term investment. You know, you're looking at stable growth. You're looking at emerging market growth as consumers get wealthier in emerging markets, and as they climb up the income ladder, they are trading up from, you know, in some cases, home brew. In some cases, people literally make alcohol in their own bathtub. You know, they're trading up to bottled beer, distilled spirits, and what have you. So I think that's a great long-term trend. It's something I'll be looking at for the next several years.
And it is very interesting to, say, be watching European soccer and see the Budweiser logo when, you know, in England where they have many of their own beers that they favor, you know, they still get good signage and availability. So,
oh, you bet.
And that's another – now, one quick question on the – now, a lot of the ingredients in a lot of the new craft beer hops and a lot of the different – ingredients that go into seem to be one of the things that they, you know, like to talk about in marketing and how they, you know, promote their taste to the consumers. But is that something that might be a marginal rise to check out on commodities, or is that kind of, is the hops industry pretty locked up with who's in it already?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the commodity prices. The price of beer has risen quite a bit in recent years. It used to be you could get a six-pack of a domestic brew for $5, you know, no problem. $5 was you didn't even have to find it on sale. That was just the regular price. These days it's closer to $7 or $8, and rising commodity prices are part of that. Now, if you're an investor and you're trying to play the commodities markets, that's a tricky business, and it's not something I recommend because commodities, you know, all it would take, you know, you think you've done it. You think you've identified the great trend and you're going to ride this. Well, all it would take would be for America's farmers to have a great bumper crop year, and then all of a sudden the market's awash with supply and your commodity investment just lost a lot of money. So that's not something I recommend for most listeners, but that is it is interesting that you mentioned commodities, because that has affected the price of beer itself.
Yeah, no, I definitely noticed the prices have gone up, and you're right, they gone up a little bit in the last couple of years. And, you know, there has been a proliferation of the craft brew, micro brews coming in, and Sam Adams definitely one of the companies that was there and is now pretty much a household name for folks who are looking for an example when they hear about this new explosion and maybe don't follow the market as closely as we just talked. We've been speaking and sharing time with Charles Sizemore today on the HealthyLife.net News at 7. Charles, why don't you let our listeners know where they can find you and some of the things you offer on your website?
Oh, you bet. Sure. I have a website, charlessizemore.com. I do have a blog that's updated most days. I also have a paid newsletter and money management services. So I offer it all.
All right. And I was just checking out your newsletters there and some great insight into, obviously, what we touched on a little bit earlier with Spain and Europe and a lot of the stuff that's hanging on with that, both domestically and foreign, and how it affects us all. Charles Sizemore, thanks again for being with us on the HealthyLife.net News at 7 today.